Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors welcoming 1 month Rails. They have an awesome domain. It's just onemonth.com. Go to onemonth.com/shoptalk to get a discount on it. It is Ruby on Rails training. You build a complete web app. It's a training site. It's really awesome. 30 minutes a day for 30 days, and you're going to end up with something cool. And CSS DevConf. Go to csdevconf.com. I'll be there speaking at it. It's coming to New Orleans, Louisiana. So we're going to tell you about that and more about 1 month Rails later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
Shopper Maniacs, you're listening to the Planet Money Podcast, a podcast all about monies and stocks and bonds and trades. I'm Dave Rupert. I'm just kidding.
All that stuff. We're going to talk about front-end stuff and stuff, mostly just about the web in general. This is Rapid Fire number 3.
That 30th?
Means no guests, no drama, no news, no nothing. Just hot question on answer action. This one is from Mr. Andy Knapp. Andy Knapp has a question.
Andy Knapp writes in, I have a question, plural, about loading JavaScript files in a WordPress environment. I utilize the WP register script and WP enqueue script functions to load my JS files. So far, sounds good. To improve site performance, I would like to load the JS asynchronously when appropriate. But one, I don't know how to add async when using these functions. And two, I'm not sure when it is appropriate to asynchronously load a script. Is there a rule of thumb for when async should be utilized? If a script is loaded in the footer, does async not matter as much?
Good questions, Andy. He may be talking about literally the async attribute on the script tag. That's what it kind of sounds like,
right? Yeah, because you can type script source jQuery.js async as like an attribute, and it will basically, usually JavaScript will just stop the browser from rendering, but this just says, go get it, and then when you get it back, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's like a super lazy, chill way to load JavaScript, but it's important because, you know, it makes your page faster in a way because it can do other things while it's getting that JavaScript, as long as it, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's a reason why JavaScript doesn't do that as default. It's because you might kind of expect the JavaScript to be completely downloaded you just might want it to run that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, his number two question is, does it not matter as much as if it's in the footer? And I think that's true. Like, you probably don't really need it to be async at all if it's all the way down at the closing body tag. You probably don't even need that.
Yeah, if it's at the bottom of your like body tag, it's basically async anyway, right? Or more or less, like, the browser has the page. It should have all the CSS. It's able to render. It doesn't matter as much. I mean, you could add it there just to be like, seriously, don't wait on this. It's totally doesn't matter. Like, and you're totally fine with, I mean, maybe it'll block your drop down menu or something like that. You know, but that's kind of the thing is like, if it's at the bottom of the page, you really need async less.
It sounds like you know that you can WP enqueue script, and then instead of it using the hook, the WP header hook, it'll use the WP footer hook. And assuming you put that hook right at the bottom of your body tag, it will load them in the footer. And that's kind of the way to go, I guess. So
As far as his first question, how I don't know how to add async to the WP enqueue script. I'm looking at the API. It doesn't look like you can, which seems really weird because it would seem like it would seem to me like I don't know. It seems to me like async or data attributes or like data template or something would be a feature of WordPress or something, but apparently it's
there's
not. Just,
I'm sure there's a one-liner hook you can do to alter the output of it.
I'm looking at WP print scripts or something. You could do a content filter on the footer on WP footer or something.
Yeah.
That seems gnarly though. It doesn't, that's weird.
There's got to be a way that adds it or maybe in an upcoming version of, oh look, there's a ticket and track that says add async argument to WP register script. Yeah. So in the future probably. It doesn't look like there's many comments on it, although it looks like a duplicate ticket is the one that I landed on. But still, it'll probably just be an extra argument at the end of it, you know? And they're probably ugh, because it probably already has like 8 optional arguments or something in it. Now there's going to be 10 now. and then it can be defer or async, you know? That's the other option. And probably just pass it in at the end of it or whatever. Just load it in the footer, and I think you'll be okay. I guess that attribute is a little bit more useful for when, like, you have no choice but to put it in the head, or it's third-party script, like you're giving someone a script and you can't count on them kind of doing the right thing with it, so you're like, I should put that attribute in there just to save them from themselves, kind of thing. Like we do that on CodePen, we make sure that script is async.
Yeah, adds and embeds, like third-party stuff, that's where async I think comes in to play most. The classic one is like the Facebook like button. You know, when it first came out, you know, there's a little JavaScript that goes with it. It's like, it's actually pretty terrible for performance, or it used to be. It used to like really stop page load. And so you have to like async it so it doesn't do that, you know?
Right. And this attribute isn't the only way to do it either. And not that we need to go down a rabbit hole here, but it used to be such that you could, one technique was to kind of document.write it into the page, and then that kind of made it non-blocking somehow. But then people are like, document.write sucks. So then the more normal way to do it is to like dynamically create a script tag and kind of inject it onto the page. And then the question is, how do you do that? Don't you need to do some kind of like DOM manipulation to do that? Yeah. And the one thing you can count on the page being there is the script tag itself. So they had to like read the DOM for that script tag and insert it before that, and that would make it async. Anyway, I wouldn't bother with all that these days. Probably just use that attribute. Anyway, we should get ourselves out of this mess.
Eject. Here we go. Next.
Kevin Hare writes in, hey guys, curious about what software you use to create your slides from when you do talks at conferences. Both of me and Dave do talk at conferences fairly often, and we don't talk about it all that much other than, hey, that was fun, but maybe we should occasionally. Maybe we'll save it for a real show at some time, but there has been some interesting posts lately about what you should charge, how you should charge, how you should think about being, you know, accepting those. So maybe we'll save that for another time. Kevin is just asking about literally the software for slides. What do you do mostly these days?
Man, I flip-flop. I'm like 50-50 between Reveal.js, which was it's a Hakim El-Hattab joint. It's really awesome. It's just like a JavaScript slider thing, and you can write Markdown in there. There's like plugins for that, and I just love it. I like that HTML is my thing. I also use Keynote. I use Nunu Keynote, which is so weird, but it's fine, whatever. That's more just like that's where like it's like if I don't want to get like bogged down into like HTML and CSS tweaking, I just say like I'm just gonna do that, you know, like because the interface to like just pop in a slide and delete a slide, that's pretty awesome. But there are also times like when I want style sheets in Keynote, that's the thing, right? Is like if you move a title like 10 pixels because like it didn't fit on one slide, but then you're like, oh, I have to go back and move it all and every slide ever, it's the worst. And so that's where I like Reveal.js. That's where I like I'll probably like the title probably switch back after a while, but That's me.
You've probably seen Reveal because it's the one that I think the default is kind of has like a, like if the slide was like on a barrel drum and the barrel drum rolled 90 degrees, the slide kind of rolls away and the new one rolls in. There's probably different transitions, but that was the kind of the one that made it famous probably.
Yeah, it's kind of futury and it's like two dimensions, right? Which is kind of weird, but like you can like go left, right, and then sometimes they'll like down arrow will light up, and that means you can kind of like dig into a topic too. And I like that for organizing my slides. I just like the idea that you can like I can like sort of just quickly, you know, I like the idea that I can just kind of like, if I need to skip a whole entire section, I can do that real easily.
That's something you got to learn for sure, because it's like there's little arrows at the bottom that say right. And it's tempting to go right. But I've seen ones, and maybe it's not Reveal, I can't remember, because there's other knockoff kind of ones too, that if you just go right, you miss a ton of stuff. And then I think you have to use the space bar or something to do the slides kind of like as they were intended, like do every single one of them. But if you just go right, you miss those, that other axis of slides. Mm-hmm. So that brought me to think, I mostly use Keynote, and I've had moments where I'm like, I'm going to make my own framework, or, oh, maybe I'll just use Reveal, or, you know, I've tinkered around with it a couple of times. It seems like I'd be the perfect type of person to want to make my own HTML slides. It's awesome because there's search, there's copy and paste, there's SEO value to them, they're easy to update. Like Dave said, there's CSS, and CSS it's like a mindset kind of, and if you don't have the abilities of CSS, it can be kind of annoying. But for whatever reason, I just still think Keynote is just so nice and easy and stuff. And I had a weird validation for it. So then the end result, if you want to provide your slides, I guess you could provide it in Keynote, but that's weird. I've never seen anybody do that. Everybody, you provide them as a PDF generally, because it makes nice looking PDFs. Mm-hmm. And I shared some slides of it just recently on Twitter. Like, here's my slides from the talk. And they're like, thank you so much for providing a friggin' presentation in a way that I don't have to click 75 times to read it. And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. Nobody's ever complimented me on it's normally thought of as harder to use a PDF.
Yeah.
But it's not really, because you just kind of scroll through it when it's in the browser instead of having to interact with everything. It's kind of like they appreciated the low interaction of a PDF.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm looking at my speaker deck. Speaker deck is where the cool kids upload their slides, right?
GitHub.
But I have like five presentations there, and one's from like 2011. The next one's from 2013. And so it's like, apparently in 2012, I was really big on Reveal.js, and they just don't show up.
I wouldn't doubt you could get a PDF out of it somehow.
I think there is like export to PDF and all that. Like Reveal.js is pretty cool when you dig into it, but it's kind of also that thing where you have to like build it yourself, and maybe you just don't have the time or the desire to like be like, I'm going to learn a new framework-y kind of thing. So,
yeah,
but I'd love it. I did the work on it's top notch. So anyway,
there's a lot of good choices. I even like new Keynote. I know a lot of people complain about it, but I think it's a little bit more CSS-y. Like, for example, you cannot put text on the page that doesn't have some a style to it.
A style, yeah.
Which is nice, because then if you know, if you just use that consistently, which it like highly encourages you to do, then you can have a header, and it doesn't help you with the Dave problem of needing to notch them down. But if you needed to like change the color or font size on all of them, it is a change once, change everywhere situation for all that stuff. So.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, haven't, yep, there you go.
Let me do a sponsor. We got go to onemonth.com/shoptalk. What a cool URL. But it's a learning thing, and it's like, this is what they do. They teach you how to build a modern web application there. They use Ruby on Rails as the back end and framework for it, which is modern and awesome. You know, it's like to the point where like it's kind of a no-brainer using Rails. We use Rails at CodePen, and it works great. You can be so highly productive in it. I feel like it's a great choice these days for, I want to learn how to build a website, you know, and I'm interested in both the front end and the back end. I want to be a website building warrior. Certainly building with Ruby on Rails is an excellent choice these days. But in this, in which that you learn in a month, you lose 30 minutes a day for 30 days, and you come out of it with a web application that you built. And it's so it's Ruby on Rails, but you're going to learn HTML and CSS too. You're going to use Bootstrap so you can just get started with styles. You're going to use Git, and then you're going to use it through GitHub. You're going to learn the command line. You're going to be working with databases using SQLite. You're going to be hosting assets on S3, you know, Amazon's thing for hosting assets, which is kind of just a almost required part of web development these days. And then you're going to end up deploying the thing on Heroku, which is a thing that can help you get the website you built in Ruby on Rails live on the internet. A real person will help you if you get stuck, and it's $100, only it's 25% off, so slightly less than $75 if you go to onemonth.com/shoptalk. Super cool company. They have 12,000 people that have done it. It's a Y Combinator company. Pretty rad. So check out onemonth.com/shoptalk if you are in the position to want to learn to build a modern web app.
$99 with the plus a 25% discount. Hey, come on now. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's a great way to learn. All right. Next question comes from David Paulson. I have a question about deciding on a development stack. I've recently been hired as a front-end lead for a new startup after working as a consultant for a couple of years. As a consultant, I've been able to make front-end tech choices for each project, living with them for about 6 months and shipping the app, doing it all again for the next client. This is great for trying new tech and tools, but now I need to pick something to live with for a much longer time. The company product is entirely API driven. The backend is .NET MVC. This is what I'm thinking. Knockout for data binding. I'm not a big fan of all the other JS MVC frameworks. And we really want the HTML to be rendered by the server, not relying on JS to handle routing and everything.
Interesting.
jQuery for DOM manipulation. Sass for CSS. CoffeeScript for JS. Jasmine for writing tests, handlebars for YAML, or handlebars and YAML for templates, Bower for dependency management, Grunt for running tasks, and Modernizer for feature detection, and YepNope for polyfill.
So David goes on to say, look at that list of choices. How can I justify all this? How do I justify X over Y? There's a look at all those choices. There's so many friggin' choices in there. And for each of those choices, there's other choices that could go back and forth. Like, what do we think about that list? Is it right? Is it wrong? How do you deal with this slew of choices that come at you? What do you think of his list?
Why not just use Bootstrap? That's my thing. No, I'm just kidding. Let's see. So it's a big list, right? Knockout for data binding, and for those who aren't familiar, and I'm really not that familiar, but it's kind of like you use like an attribute. You're like data on click or something, submit form, you know, and it's weird. It gets back into that kind of, I think somebody from Knockout's going to write, and I'm going to get in trouble. But it's kind of just, it's sort of like you tell your HTML rather than like rando generating JavaScript. You're just kind of making your HTML to tell you JavaScript.
Anyway, that's a big choice right there. And he's just saying that that's because we only want that aspect, and Angular and Ember provide those things as well, but they also like have a router and stuff. And they're thinking like, no, I'm going to keep the router server side.
Just HTML. So, and I think that's a smart choice. A lot of people recommend that.
It means so you're not going to really be building a one page app, which is fine. jQuery, kind of an obvious choice, especially because you're not going Angular, which provides a lot of what jQuery can do.
Knockout, you're pushing down Knockout and jQuery now. I mean, is that pretty heavy duty? That would be my thing. It's like if you have to serve that on every page.
Well, they're saying no router though, so that means they're going to need Ajax, and that means they're going to need jQuery to me. And he does specifically say jQuery for DOM manipulation. So, but you're going to need it for more than that, I promise. Sass for CSS, fine, obvious choice. CoffeeScript, weird. Maybe
if that's your cup of tea, but you know, that's one more thing to compile. I mean, that's, you know, if you're writing jQuery, I don't know that CoffeeScript gives you a bunch of advantages, IMHO.
I wrote a post today about CoffeeScript and jQuery because I'm like, I write in it once in a while and I always forget. So I just made a reference kind of post thing there. That would be one that I might opt out of unless the people working for. So the deal is that you're kind of going to be this, you're working on this thing long term with the team. What is the team into? So, I mean, there's some things that you can throw at your team and just, you know, be like, this is using Knockout. I don't want to have a big debate about this. But CoffeeScript might be one of those things that you might want to run by the team first.
Yeah, that would be a thing. Jasmine for writing tests, sure. I mean, I think anything.
Yeah, if, whatever. At least you're doing it.
I mean, I would say most people aren't doing it, and they should be, myself included. So
that's not as all in, right? You could then add on something else or change it or whatever. That's not as crucial of a choice, you know?
Yeah, you could add in Mocha, Chai, whatever, doing different things or whatever. Travis CI or blah blah blah. I don't know. Those are testy things. Handlebars and YAML. For templating, I think that's fine. I'm curious about YAML. Did it mean HAML or YAML?
I don't really know. I mean, YAML's just a... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to even talk about it so much. I mean,
Is he using, like, YAML?
Isn't it just, like, a format for a file?
JSON?
Yeah, right. Or, like, instead of JSON or something?
Yeah, sure. All right. Okay. Yeah, I mean... If you've got a thick JavaScript stack, don't use YAML, use JSON, I would say, maybe. Handlebars is pretty cool. Compile that, though, and he's saying he's compiling that in the build process. So that's good. Again, I'm already seeing, like, you've added quite a bit to the build process. So I would maybe try to, get vanilla on anything I could at this point. But Bower for dependency, that's great for teams. Grunt is awesome. That's good. And Modernizer for feature detection, that's great. Yep, nope for polyfill loading. I would actually say yep, nope is maybe deprecated.
Is it though? I was looking at script loaders just the other day, and it was like, what's left? What's like something where I can just be like, hey, JavaScript, load this, then this, then this.
Yeah. In order, is that kind of what you're thinking?
Especially in order. And I'll tell you the backstory. And I know we're going down a rabbit hole, but that's okay. Bear with us, listeners. I had this. Okay. This is it. This is going to be like 6 minutes, you guys. But I really actually wish Dave was here so I could talk it through him. Let's say you want to do mustard cutting. You with me? Mm-hmm. Mustard cutting is like
mustard.
Yeah, like there's a particular set of circumstances on the page, like screen width and pixel density and the support of query selector all and those type of things. And based on that, which is, whether those are supported or not supported, I want to load different stuff. So one of them common is like some scripts. So like I'm going to do the mustard cut and I'm going to load an additional script. That's easy. You just load an additional script. If jQuery, you just do git script or something. There's another situation where you might want to load some scripts and maybe some styles. Not very common because CSS is so like small and compressed and stuff anyway that you probably just put it all the CSS together. But then there's a situation where you want to do a mustard cut and you need everything different. You need different HTML, different CSS, and different JavaScript. You need everything different. So that's like weird, and that's the situation like the CodePen editor, right? We basically want you to go to /pen on CodePen, and if we want to do a mustard cut test, ideally, and if we cut the mustard so that we figure out it's basically like a mobile environment we've decided, but mostly based on screen width for us, I want to load everything different. So I was like, I'm going to do it. And we had this weird cookie technique before, and it works, but it has to do a redirect kind of thing, and it's a little slow. So I was like, I'm going to do a mustard cut. So what I did was I made this huge chunk of HTML, and in that HTML is the scripts and the styles, and I load this really tiny little page that has as very little on it as possible. It essentially just has jQuery on it, a mustard cut test, and like a you know, it has like the title and stuff, but like nothing else. It loads super duper fast. And then it does the mustard cut. And then if it determines it's a desktop environment, it loads this big chunk of HTML that has everything else in it. And if it's the mobile type of world, it loads this other different big chunk of HTML that has everything in it, including scripts and styles and everything all up in there. And it kind of works. And I think that's kind of a decent way to do it, except for one thing that ruins the entire thing. And that's all the script tags that are in. Let's say there's three or four of them in this chunk of HTML that you bring down and just chuck into the DOM. Mm-hmm. It doesn't load those scripts in order. It just loads. It runs them arbitrarily whenever.
Oh, as they get them?
As it gets async. Them. So it just totally ruins the entire idea. Would have been a really easy way for us to handle it with one AJAX request, a really simple mustard cut that loads entirely different templates and everything, except for that. So I'm like, crap, this isn't going to work. Maybe I'll just change that chunk of HTML to just load the HTML and scripts, and then I need a script loader. I need something that will run the scripts that I give it in order. So what is like the go-to script loader? Please just load these scripts in order, like just the script loader part of Yep Nope.
Well, Yep Nope would be just the script loader kind of, or like the kind of that. There's Lab.js Kyle Simpson. Lab.js is kind of, that was Kyle's big thing, like for performance and stuff, he was just like going really hard after it. But I think it kind of lost momentum just because browsers added like the defer attributes and stuff like that. Yeah.
I heard that's a mess. But Lab.js is like over kind of, which just says no future development work expected. It's been a couple of years since that's been touched. That would seem like a weird choice to me knowing how abandoned this shit it is. But or
jQuery's when then might be an option.
I mean, I suppose because you're just trying to load it in order and I'm using jQuery to do AJAX anyway.
Yeah, so you could just say like $.when, you know, $.get.
But actually, isn't that the point of that is kind of that they're async, you know?
Yeah, well, but
how do you defer the execution?
When it's a promise defer, so it's like wait for this promise to come back and then do this action. And then when that promise comes back, do this action. So you can kind of like,
in that case, it seems more like, why don't you just use git script with callbacks? Because you're trying, like you want them
to
run
in order.
Yeah, that's
sort of essentially
I guess
it could end up being just a daisy chain of
right. But I could see doing it with promises instead. So it's not like indented callback soup or whatever, but I guess that would work.
But I don't know. It does sound like this might be a modernizer.load. I mean, the whole thing that modernizer is a testing framework. So you just say whatever modernizer.test, and then you could write your own custom test, my tests, and then it's, if it's true.
That's true. I just don't need anything else for modernizer, you know?
Yes, it's a little bit.
I just want just the loader, but maybe you can grab just the loader out of it. It is pretty much.
Just do Yep Nope then. Yeah, OG, yep, nope.
Maybe, but that seems weird, too, because, like, you're saying it's, like, I don't know, it's just not thought about anymore, so it's weird to depend on something that, like, nobody cares about
anymore.
Nobody
really uses
it. Then there was Head.js.
Would probably be, like, don't use it.
Right. So, anyway, so back to David's question. I know that was a thing. It's just an interesting thing to think about. You've made a ton of choices here. None of them seem particularly bad to me, so I think you'll probably be okay there, although we know absolutely nothing about what you are building. So that
if you come back and say you're building a blog, I'm going to strangle you.
Yeah. This sounds very appy. So it better
pretty
be
heavy duty app. So I'm going to go enterprise since you're doing .NET. I think that is a good choice. I think whatever gets the job done, you know, I mean, you may get down the road and decide like, oh, Knockout was a big mistake, you know, but just make sure nothing like whatever ties you for life into. Yeah.
I hope you're like factoring in your people and stuff too. You know, like run this by your team. Or does anybody like have visceral reactions to it? I mean, at some point you're the master and have to make these decisions. But like, there's no reason why you need to, you know, shove it down someone's throat. You can be like, this is what we're looking at, team. What's mm-hmm. up? And then remember that all decisions aren't forever. You know, some of these things are harder to back out of than others, but none of them are impossible to. So at some point you can just make some choices and then kind of reevaluate them over time. No big deal. Good luck, David. Let's do another question.
Next question. Tim Evico writes in, my question involves static site generators. Why use them? What do they make sense for clients who wish to generate their own content? Can you use contact forms, comment plugins, and other dynamic content with SSGs?
static site generators.
I read it as like Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Are there any good tutorials out there for us who have never used them before? What if I use Node and Gulp? Thanks, as always.
Rack.
So static site generators, why use them? They are awesome. Next.
Fast and secure.
Fast and secure. Like, you don't have a database in the cloud that you're putting up. You're generating everything locally from Markdown files into HTML.
That's as succinct as you can explain it, right? So can your client create a Markdown file and save it somewhere? Maybe, but that's a little weird, and so probably not the best choice generally for clients.
Most of my clients don't have a strong understanding of YAML front matter, which would be required kind of to use a static site generator, or command line Jekyll. You know, they probably don't get that, so that's probably not for them. You can't use contact forms. You can use comment plugins like Discus or something like that, but sure. You don't have comments
for a form, you know. So you could just plug in stuff that works elsewhere. I think though that there's different ones. Like Jekyll is just super totally flat, right? But Kirby is kind of like a static site generator, but also runs on PHP. And because you have PHP, then you could make a form. I wonder if that's one of the reasons they do it.
I think Jessica Hish uses Kirby and she likes it. It's kind of like you get this it's like static site generator plus, you know, a little bit of dynamic.
I feel like
stuff.
There's probably 30 CMSs out there that are like doing a pretty good job. And if you were to ever just like super dig into one of them, you could come to love it probably. And it's like, that's the way it is. And because you did that, now you're just going to be biased forever. And it's just a weird situation, you know. It's like comparing hosts, you know. Like, how many human beings out there have experience with like 30 web hosts? Like none, right? So it's none. Just it's such a hard thing. So you'd be like, oh, I support Bluehost or whatever. Sure, maybe they burned great for you. Maybe they sucked for somebody else. Nope, both of you are unqualified to talk about their service as a whole because. Your experience is so limited. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, okay, let's move on.
No, that's good. I think there's probably tutorials out there. I'm trying to think of like getting started with Jekyll kind of posts.
I bet GitHub has one because it's their thing.
Yeah, GitHub would have one. The GitHub documentation is pretty good. I know Majigo, it's a paid course. They've advertised here before, but they have a getting up and going with Jekyll course. And then what if I use Node and Gulp? You have to get really clever. I've got it to where I spawn a child process and that compiles my Gulp. Or compiles my Jekyll site.
I just Googled Gulp and Jekyll, and there's totally thingies for it.
Yep. So there you go.
All right. The CSS Dev Conf is coming up. Go to CSSDevConf.com. If you do that right this second, it'll redirect you to 2014.devconf because they have done this several years. Remember when me and Dave were being all super annoying about Hawaii back in the day and playing ukuleles and stuff? That was CSS DevConf. Then it came around again to like the hills around Denver, Colorado, and it was super duper fun up there. It was at the Shining Hotel where they had, I don't know. So the point of this conference is they pick out really cool locations. They picked out a really cool location. Again, it's in New Orleans, Louisiana. So at this exact moment, you can go to CSSDevConf.com and vote for talks. I'm speaking there already, so I got to skip the voting process. I guess I'm just cool like that. But there's other talks that are going to happen and fill out the time. It's like a multi-track thing. There's just tons of CSS people there talking about CSS. It's really fun. I like focused conferences like that. But you can affect what those talks are, and you get to vote on them kind of like you're anonymous and they're anonymous, right? So you're just picking based on what the world likes. So there's no kind of bias involved, which I think is pretty darn cool. Check out cssdevconf.com, and you can see pictures of how awesome the hotel is going to be, and buy tickets, and check out the workshops, and look at trailers from past ones. It all looks super, super cool. I'll see you there, cssdevconf.com. What do we got here? Let's do one from Mr. Joel. Joel says... asks, is there a way to make a line of text fill the width of a parent container as if it were justified? Well, there's text-align justify, right? But that only works if it's multi-line. Like, let's say it's two lines of text. The first line will be justified and the second line won't be, right?
I wonder if he's talking about, like, headings or something like that. Just, he wants a text to like fill up, go full width, huh? Is that, do you think?
Yeah, is well, that like, what you're reading? Is that maybe, which means like maybe that's display table territory or display flex, and it will just kind of naturally do that. Maybe, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's, I mean, he just says a line of text, fill the width of the parent as if it were justified. Maybe, I mean, you know, like you, we can imagine like the columns in a newspaper kind of often do that, or magazines sometimes. They just, text kind of like looks, has a special kind of cool look to it if it's justified, or because there's like the, each, you know, characters form like a wall on either side of the text. But it's what came to my mind is that he has one line of text, and text align justify isn't working for him because it doesn't work on the kind of the last line in text. So because otherwise that'd be weird. Like, what if two words were left over? One would be way along the left edge, and one would be way along the right edge. That would be like totally ridiculous to read. So it doesn't do that. I think there are CSS3 properties that control how you want that last line to work with text align justify. But I have seen a technique that makes just one line of text work, and it's just as simple as adding a pseudo element to the end of the text element that is otherwise invisible, right? So it's just like height 1 pixel, background none, kind of whatever you need to do to make it not visible but still render, and make it like with you know, 75% or something. I don't know about 100% because that might do weird stuff, but long enough that you, even with just a couple words on a line and this invisible chunk put in there that kind of is like a inline word, it will wrap that big long pseudo element to the next line, so it will then justify the top line. You know what I mean? It's like a trick. Tricks the browser into thinking there's two lines of text when in your world there's really just one. Anyway, whatever. That's what I thought, but maybe Dave was thinking, you know, he just has, you know, blog, nav, pictures, contact, and wants them to fill the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm always thinking of, like, fit text or whatever, you know, as a thing I made or whatever. You know, fit text actually does not do it, so don't use that one. You could use slab text. It makes like headlines like fill up the whole width. Big text from Zach Leatherman is good for that, kind of to fill a whole line. There was another one that used like letter spacing to fill. I can't remember it, but it's interesting. It's like, I'm always interested when, like, the first line of any plugin is, like, unlike fit text, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, man, what did I do this time? But, yeah, so I forget what it was called. But anyway, it had a really cool demo, but I can't remember it. It had a demo of, like, a, I don't know, like an old-timey racing chart or something, like, of all the horse names or something like that. It was pretty interesting.
Now it's making me... feel like I've seen that again. Dang it.
Darn it. Anyway, there are JavaScript plugins. Check out slab text or big text. Those are pretty good. So yeah, there you go. Next question. Andrew Cowley writes in job advertisements I've been seeing lately, all the best jobs have AngularJS listed as one of the requirements. I know tech recruiters like their buzzwords, so I think they're using Angular as a synonym for up-to-date strong JavaScript skills. I really love creating websites that work everywhere. The idea of using the latest tech at the expense of accessibility and progressive enhancement doesn't sit well with me. How can I keep advancing my career while maintaining those core beliefs?
That's a loaded one. Because the first part of the question is are they using AngularJS as truly a synonym for just up-to-date strong JavaScript skills? And I would just try to get to the bottom of that right away, perhaps, and just be like, hey, you guys really using Angular in here? And maybe be like, you know, I haven't used it a ton, but I know JavaScript, so I could get up to speed because it's, you know, I've been doing JavaScript for a long time and I'm an intelligent human being and have faith in myself and can do that. But then it seems like, as Andrew goes on, that like he's like anti-Angular almost, in that he would be willing to work somewhere as long as they aren't using it, because that's against his core beliefs in a way. Or I wonder if you actually feel that strongly, or if I'm, you know, if you saw what they were doing and it was cool and they were willing to hire you and get up to speed with Angular, that you'd be happy to do that too. Especially if you could bring to the party some of your, you know, progressive enhancement type of opinions. I don't know that using Angular means that progressive enhancement is out the window. It might, but I don't think so. I'm sure there's some way to make it all work together if you wanted it to.
I think right now it sort of does. It just, like, it requires JavaScript to make it all work. But you could be the guy who rolls in accessibility and progressive enhancement into that. Maybe you interview there or something, or you apply there and they're like, literally 100.1% of our users have JavaScript enabled. So, you know, and then you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. Like maybe it rolls out onto phones, you know, which always, you know, like an encapsulated environment, which, you know, will have JavaScript.
Or it's an internal tool or whatever, where the tech team can keep everybody up to date on that type of thing.
Yeah.
And like, it's still your choice. It's still your website. If JavaScript doesn't load, it's still your choice of how you have your server handle things. You know, it might be a rewrite situation, but like, it's still your choice.
Yeah, you could be the guy who figures out how to do it accessibly and progressively enhanced, and then you like make the company tens of dollars doing that.
Oh. It would seem weird to me if they're using it as a buzzword. It seems weird if you'd responded to an ad and you're like, and they're like, oh no, we don't actually use Angular. I just put Angular in the ad.
Yeah,
that would be weird. I'm sure they're using Angular.
Yeah, I think they just want whatever.
Right.
They're probably interested in Angular. They maybe don't know what it is, the person who wrote the job, but, you know, somebody down the line told them, we want to use Angular.
Yep. So. Yeah. And if you're just like, you know, a good, likable, smart person, you can get it.
Isn't there like a thing, like a psychology thing? I'm not diagnosing Andrew or anything, but where if something bothers you, you see it more, like, you know, PT cruisers or something like that. You know, you're just like,
that's the best example ever.
You know, like once it like is, you're like, what? You're like, once you like form an opinion, you then start seeing it everywhere or something like that. So maybe that's
like
also
a niche
what
opinion too. It's not like the word ratchet, which I have decided is obnoxious, but that's just because it's up and coming, right? It's not as like niche as a PT cruiser.
Yeah. So that's maybe a thing. Maybe you figure out your own biases or what's causing you. You know, I don't know that. But I apply for jobs, man. I don't think you're pegged down. I think like the ability to make a website work everywhere is probably not going to be one of those skills people are like, yeah, we don't need that. Like, I think it's going to be even bigger in the next decade as things roll out into the like global African Asian like way into the like deep part, you know, like the parts where like you're getting Wi-Fi from a blimp and stuff like that. Like, yep. That's like what the next wave of the web is. So right. Like if you can know how to make websites work on that, you're probably going to be in demand. So there you go.
I hope so. Let's end with just so we scare somebody out there. What is the let's end with this question from Jeff Brupinski, who just has a question about time. How long does it take to normally build a website from start to finish? And Jeff probably happens to know that Dave back, you know, not in the too distant past, worked on Microsoft.com, or he mentions my website, CSSTricks.com. What is it like? What is, you know, from zero to finished? What was the time frame?
Man, I mean, like, how long does it take me? It takes me like 8 hours, or it takes me, I don't know, 2-3 weeks or something. But how long does it take people, you know, like
in your task of writing some markup and stuff for that was probably a couple of week situation, but project was longer because they needed to talk it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to get buy-in from stakeholders, and, you know, especially on a big project like Microsoft.com, it's a company of what, like 100,000 people or something. I really don't even know, but, like, you know, and you have to, like, go up the chain, and Steve Ballmer has to thumbs up your website and stuff like that. It's like, it's a big deal, you know? So, like, that takes a while. Like, there's conversations, you have to talk, you have to make sure business objectives are being met. That takes a long time. I mean, that said, so I think for Paravel, like, we typically, like, in terms of like a WordPress site or something like that, you know, every site's a WordPress site, but it's basically like a homepage, a article index or whatever, an archive, and then a single view, like, basically, right? Like, in theory, you could kind of get most of that fleshed out, an original design, kind of critical thinking, some discovery and stuff. I mean, I think you could probably get that in 3 months or so and have some time to test and kill and stuff like that. So, but, you know, maybe some people work really fast. Maybe some people work way slower. I mean, I built the accessibility project on Bootstrap, over in 24 hours. Like, so there you go. Like,
yeah, there's just, I mean, Dave is full of good info and is also saying it just, there's just no way to answer that question. You know, people, just, it's you, it's them. There's just a million billion factors in here. And not to mention the fact that it just takes as long as you decide it's going to take. Like, a website could take 4 years to create. That might be kind of stupid, but it could, you know, you could say, I'm going to get this thing down. So, I mean, video games take that long to make sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, what are the goals? What am I starting with? What am I going to consider done anyway? Because finish is a weird word with websites too, because certainly none of us consider those domains, like, the project ended, but the website isn't finished, you know?
Yeah, that's a big thing. I mean, yeah, like, my blog is technically done, but I already know what I need to do to make it better.
Right. So what you're asking is, so, how long does an arbitrary project take? You know, like, mine.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's e-commerce, you know, like, dude, I mean, that, you know, that's going to take ages. I mean, it's got 17 views, but then I know shops that can probably spit it out in 2 weeks. And that's something I could never do, you know. That's, again, that's like personal thing too. You know, it's like, are you starting from a theme? Like, are you just modding a WordPress theme or whatever? Then that's awesome. Like, do that, you know, but that, maybe that's only going to take you 6.5 minutes. So who was it? It's Adam Clark. Is that who, he just actually hit me up on Skype, but, he does podcasting over at that Good Stuff FM. You probably heard of it, but, he just launched a thing where he's like, I'll code your WordPress site in a day. Like, I'll have WordPress by the end of the day. So that's kind of extreme, you know.
I like that idea though, that because Jeff is just kind of asking about this, and I wonder if he's just kind of, I don't know, feeling self-conscious about how long it takes him, or like, is there some, I don't know, like, what can you expect in doing this thing as a business? You could go anywhere along this spectrum. You could just knock out websites. You could have a one day turnaround if especially with something like WordPress, where if you learn that tool particularly well, and you have a set of go to themes and frameworks and stuff, and you work with clients that you know don't need particularly appy things, or you could, you know, be more in the bespoke website business. where you're creating all kinds of custom stuff and there's lots of people involved and possibly the payout is bigger.
Money.
That's a good place to end it. Let's wrap it up and...
There we go. All right. Thank you for listening to yet another... rapid fire episode.
Just a hair shorter than it normally is. We're going to experiment with that because there's I've seen graphs in the past where podcasts just get longer and longer and longer over time. We're going to fight that a little bit and try to shorten it up as much as we can.
Bringing it down. And we really appreciate you for listening. Thank you for voting us up in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. We appreciate your listenership and keep sending in your questions. These are fun. Thank you. Chris, you got anything else?
ShopTalkShow.com.